As you probably guessed, I'll be continuing on the dream series this morning from the life of Joseph. When I originally thought about doing this, I thought, there's a good 2 or 3 week sermons in there, but we're well past that already, and where I've managed to get up to this morning, I still think there's probably another 2 or 3 to come to finish it. So maybe Christmas we might get finished with this. But my title this morning is, Who's the Daddy Now? Who's the daddy now? In what situation would someone say that sort of thing? Who's the daddy now? Anybody? Yeah, when you've been proved right. When someone has sort of probably been put in their place. You say, who's the daddy now? You know, it's sort of a bit of a prideful, boastful saying really, isn't it? That it's not putting somebody down, but it's saying, you know who's the boss. And this will be apparent later in the sermon why I chose this as my title. So, who's the daddy now? It's in God's plan. Last time, we looked at only the first verse, really, in chapter 41 of Genesis. If you'd just like to turn to Genesis 41 in your Bibles, we're going to continue from there this morning. The first verse in Genesis 41 says this, Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he stood by the river. So last time we looked at that one verse. Joseph at that time was in prison. If you remember, he interprets the butler's and the baker's dreams. Joseph says to them, remember me when you're in front of Pharaoh. The baker is executed and the butler is restored to his job as the cupbearer. But the butler forgot Joseph, didn't he? Forgot all about him. Poor Joseph has another 2 full years to wait in prison before anything else happens. If you remember, we looked at 2 points from verse 1. Firstly, that God had not forgot or abandoned Joseph, even though years had marched on. God had a plan and a time for everything to be fulfilled. So God's timing is perfect. Secondly, maybe you might remember saying this to each other. Oi, you're not the only dreamer. Pharaoh had a dream. The butler and the baker also had dreams, and those dreams were given by God, weren't they, to non-Christian people. Don't be surprised who God can be, what God can use to fulfill his plans. God is in charge of all people on the earth, even if they aren't Christians. That means God is in total control. He is the daddy. This morning we're going to look at chapter 1. I've just read you verse 1. And what it says there, that at the end of 2 years, Pharaoh had a dream. So God gave Pharaoh a dream after the 2 years had passed since Joseph's interpretation of the prisoner's dream came true. Now, to save my voice, I wonder if someone would just read me verse 1 to verse 7 of this chapter. Shout out loud and we might be able to pick you up on the mic.
Behold, seven other kine came up after them out of the river, ill favoured and lean fleshed, and stood by the other kine upon the brink of the river. And the ill favoured and lean fleshed kine did eat of them seven well favoured of that kine, so Pharaoh awoke. And he slept and dreamed the second time. And behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon that one stone. Rank and good. And behold, 7 vineyards and blasted with eagles will sprung up after them. And the 7 vineyards devoured the 7 rank and foliage of Pharaoh above, and behold, they was a dream.
It's nice to wake up sometimes, isn't it, from a dream and think, that were only a dream. I'm so glad. Don't know what you're like, but most of the time I don't dream, but if I eat or drink certain things, I do dream quite badly. Sometimes it's nice to wake up and think, wow, that was only a dream. But this was a dream inspired by God. And Pharaoh wasn't going to forget it, and God wasn't going to let him forget it. Now, I'm not going to talk about the actual content of the dream, but I wanted to read it so that you can understand where we were in the story. We know from hindsight what the dream meant, don't we? But poor old Pharaoh, his wise men, and even Joseph at that point didn't know what it meant. Simple everyday objects, cows and ears of corn, were doing very strange things in the dream, weren't they? Devouring each other and staying exactly the same, but when they should have changed, and very strange. This was no ordinary dream. It was given by God, wasn't it? And it could not be forgotten. My first point this morning is, when God gives the dream, you can't forget it. God won't let you forget it. Whatever happens, whatever situation you find yourself in, it's always there. It burns in your heart and in your memory. It's not an everyday run-of-the-mill dream. It's special and something to be grasped at and sought after. You know the one I'm talking about. You know what you can't get out of your mind, what God puts in your heart. In verse 8 of this reading, it says, "Now it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all its wise men. And Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was no one who could interpret them for Pharaoh." Pharaoh's dream bugged him, in an easy way of saying it. His spirit, it says there, his spirit was troubled. You know, it proper got in under his skin, this dream. It wasn't just something where he could forget. He knew, he didn't know why, but he knew that it was something different. You know, it wasn't just an ordinary dream. The last place anyone would want to be is in the presence of a troubled Pharaoh. I talked a little bit about Pharaoh while we've been looking at this story of Joseph, haven't I? But Pharaoh summoned his wise men of the time. He summoned his magicians of the time, whatever they could do, I don't know. Would you like to be in their position? Being summoned to a Pharaoh that was pretty grumpy, had a bad dream and wanted it interpreted then. If you think about it, a snap of Pharaoh's fingers and they could all be dead. You know, if they said the wrong thing, or he's already in a bad mood, you know, not had a good night's sleep and this dream's troubling him. Say the wrong thing, you're dead in front of a Pharaoh. Would you like to be in that position? I can't imagine Pharaoh saying, "Would one of you please interpret my dream?" I can imagine him saying, "Someone better interpret this dream quick, or someone's going to get it." Not a nice position to be in, would it? There's going to be a dire consequence if someone didn't interpret the dream, interpret it soon. And the not-so-wise men and the very unmagical magicians couldn't interpret it, could they? Whatever they had got and whatever way they used to do what they did, they couldn't use it here, and they couldn't do it, could they? Then God turned on the light in the butler's head, and he said, "What have I said?" He said, "What I have said many times, God has turned the light on." Oh, sorry, I'm getting that wrong completely. God turned on the light in the butler's head, and he said to him, "What God has done to me many times, that he's turned the light on in my head, you know, when I've forgot something, what he's told me to do, or, you know, where I should have remembered." And these are the words that he said in verse 9. Then the butler spoke to Pharaoh, saying, "I remember my faults this day." Does that have ever happened to you? Do you suddenly remember something? You go, "Oh, how could I forget that?" You know, something which had been, in the day, so important, yet a long time had gone past, and then suddenly, the lights turned on and you remember it. The butler suddenly remembers poor old Joseph. "Oh, I've forgotten Joseph. 2 years have gone by. Not a week or a couple of hours or whatever. 2 years have gone by." My second point this morning is that God brought back the memory of the dream. You know, God brought it back. When God needed it to be in the butler's head, it was in the butler's head, wasn't it? Something sparked it off. It's got to be the word dream that sparked it off, hasn't it? You know, Pharaoh says, "I have had a dream." The butler thought, "I've had a dream as well. You know, I know the man." The dream was God given, the dream was God interpreted, and the dream was brought back to memory by God. This is when I get to bring one of my favourite verses from the Bible that has taught me to understand God's plan a little bit more. And it's in the Old Testament, Ecclesiastes chapter 3 and verse 1 to 8, but we're not going to read all that. I just want to read you the first verse. You can read the rest at home if you want. But to everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. And then, as you know, it carries on to sort of bring a list of about 20 things, what there is a time for to do and not to do, or be and not be. But for everything there is a season and a time for every purpose under heaven. The time was right for the butler to remember Joseph. The time was right for Joseph to come before Pharaoh. Any sooner or later wouldn't have worked, as we talked about last time. God had put in place a plan, and he'd executed it perfectly to the second. In verse 9 to verse 13 of chapter 41 of Genesis, and we're not going to read that, but the butler tells Pharaoh the amazing story of the two prisoners' dreams and how God, through Joseph, had interpreted those dreams perfectly and everything had come to pass what he said. Then, in verse 14, comes Joseph's PPI. Now, you can remember what PPI is, can you? Anybody? From a pivotal, began with pivotal. That's the one. Then came Joseph's PPI, pivotal point incident, the place in his life and in his dream where everything started to tilt in his favour. Might not look that way, but that was the actual moment when Joseph was sat before Pharaoh, stood before Pharaoh when this PPI came. Verse 14, it says, then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him quickly out of the dungeon, and he shaved, changed his clothing, and came to Pharaoh. That was Joseph's PPI. That was when it was going to start moving the other way. This is the minute it all began to swing in Joseph's favour, the point that God had made the balance to tip in Joseph's favour. Does anyone know how long it was from Joseph being taken by the Ishmaelites into slavery until he's now standing before Pharaoh? Close. 13 years, yeah. He does tell you. In Genesis 37, verse 2, it tells us that Joseph was 17 years old. That's at the start of the story where we looked at. And then in Genesis 41, verse 46, it says that Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh. 13 years had gone by. 13 years, Joseph had been a slave. He'd gone from being the son of quite a wealthy man and having everything he wanted to being a slave for 13 years. 13 years have passed since that first dream was interpreted by Joseph. Look at the trouble it had got him in, you know, interpreting dreams. Joseph's PPI, pivotal point incident, had been 13 years in the making. It took a long time, hadn't it? But it was here now. It was starting. And you can be sure that when God turns things in your favour, when the season is right, when the time comes for the purpose to be fulfilled God has put on your life, it will come with a bang, you know, like it did for Joseph. He'll bring it. You'll know it. You'll recognise it. But the question is, will you embrace it? Joseph still had to do, at this point, what God was going to tell him to do. He could still refuse or say, look at the trouble, you know, this interpreting of dreams has got me into. He still had to do it, didn't he? All the things that had happened to Joseph, all the dreams and interpretations were experiences for Joseph, so that for now, none of those things had brought the fulfillment of the dream, had it, that God had given to Joseph, but it was all about to change. It was a big time for Joseph. Then it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh had a dream, and behold, he stood by the river. You know, it said in this other verse that Pharaoh sent for Joseph. When a Pharaoh in those days sent for someone, what do you think would happen? Well, they're going to be brought before Pharaoh, whether they wanted to or not. And Joseph was going to now become before Pharaoh, whether he liked it or not. And it was going to be quickly, because the Pharaoh, I could imagine, was even more cross by now, having his magicians and things, and his wise men, not being able to fulfill, talk about what the dream meant. The thing to note here is, and it's not, I don't think there's any spiritual significance in it, you might be able to find some, but I found it quite amusing really, that Joseph had to have a speed wash and a speed shave and get changed before they would bring him before Pharaoh. Pharaoh wouldn't look at Joseph in the state that he was in from prison. You know, a dirty, unshaven, however he was in prison, smelly prisoner. Before he could come in Pharaoh's presence, he had to be shaved, he had to be washed, he had to be changed. And I could imagine him like shaving him and, you know, washing him and throwing clothes on, because they wanted to get him to Pharaoh as quick as possible. If it was now, it would be the Kosovan car wash, wouldn't it? He'd in one end and out the other and come out sparkling. But now, after 13 years a slave, Joseph is at the season and time where his God-given gifts of interpretation and administration were going to bring about the true start of the fulfillment of Joseph's God-given dream. So Joseph is speed-shaved, dressed, and was brought before Pharaoh. And Pharaoh says to him, "I've heard that you can interpret dreams." What pressure that puts on Joseph. You know, everyone else in Egypt has failed. Anyone else that Pharaoh could have brought and might have had a chance. Then poor old Joseph is dragged out of the prison, you know, speed washed like cattle, put in front of Pharaoh and said, "Right." Pharaoh says to him, "I've heard you can interpret dreams." What would have happened if he didn't interpret the dream? Probably him, the magicians, you know, the wise men, not so wise men. Someone was going to get it, weren't they? I love Joseph's answer in verse 16. So Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, "It is not me. God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace." When you look into that reply, there's a lot more. There's loads of sermons in there. But can you remember what I said last time? To say or infer that anyone was God except Pharaoh in that time, and especially in front of Pharaoh or to Pharaoh, would just result in instant death. You know, Pharaoh wouldn't even have to say anything. The people round about him would know, and they would kill him. And he said, "God will give Pharaoh an answer of peace." Now, to this person who at this time in history thought that he was God, Joseph is really saying, "My God, the true God, will give Pharaoh an answer, and that answer will bring peace to Pharaoh's troubled spirit." And it did, as you look at the rest of the story. For Pharaoh, it brought peace and understanding about the dream, and a revelation of how true our true God works. For Joseph, it was the point that God tipped the scales in Joseph's favour, the PPI of Joseph's dream. I'm going to finish this morning with three verses which will explain why I called this sermon, "Who's the Daddy Now?" The first one is verse 25. I mentioned this one briefly last time. Then Joseph said to Pharaoh, "The dreams of Pharaoh are one. God has shown Pharaoh what he is about to do." In other words, God, the true God, has shown you, Pharaoh, what the true God is about to do. The God who is the true daddy is saying, "Who's the daddy now? You know, I'm showing you what's going to happen in history." Pharaoh could do nothing whatsoever about what God was going to do over the next few years. It was all God, wasn't it? The next one is in verse 32. "And the dream was repeated to Pharaoh twice, because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass." So that's Joseph just telling Pharaoh why the dream had to be given twice and in two ways, because it was established by God. It was established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. God, the true daddy, was about to show Pharaoh who who is the boss. Oh, he was going to bring it to pass. When God establishes something, no power or person on earth can stop it. And we have to recognize that in our lives as well, don't we? When God does something in our lives, there's no one on earth that can change that except us or God. Let me ask you a question this morning. Had God done all these things so Pharaoh could be abased and come to know who the true daddy is? Or had God done all these things so that Joseph's dream could be fulfilled? Who had he done it for? Whichever it was, it brings to life that scripture from Romans 8:28, which we've sort of studied quite a lot, haven't we? And I just want to read you that one, or if someone gets it before me, you can read it. Romans 8 and verse 28. And we know that all things work together for good to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. If you look at this story, it's a perfect example, even though it's Old Testament to New Testament, because God had interwoven two completely different life circles and ways of life together at this time. Two worlds which were normally completely apart and two people which would never ever have met in real life at that time. God had woven them together in his plan so that God's plan and purpose for each person could be fulfilled. Joseph, who was now a Hebrew slave, was with Pharaoh, the king of Egypt, the top man of that time. And God was there in the middle of it. You know, and then whatever God wanted was going to happen. I can imagine God saying or thinking, who's the daddy now, Pharaoh? And we know from how history repeats itself later on in the Bible in Exodus that it isn't the last time that God has to deal with Pharaoh, a Pharaoh that thinks he's God. Finally, in verse 38, it says, and Pharaoh said to his servants, can we find such a one as this, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? Let me ask you this question. What or who gave Pharaoh an understanding of what the Spirit of God was? Pharaoh thought he were God. So how could Pharaoh come out with a statement like that, in whom the Spirit of God lives? How? God must have given him a revelation that he was God. You know, that he was the daddy, that Pharaoh wasn't God. And Pharaoh recognized in Joseph the true Spirit of the living God. God himself showed Pharaoh who is the daddy now. God showed Pharaoh who was the true God. And Pharaoh could not stop what God was about to do. But if he did as God told him to do, then in a way, Pharaoh got some glory from it as well, didn't he? He saved not only his own people, but as we know from how the story goes, millions of other people as well, you know, in the land at that time. You could call that an awesome move of God, you know, to save the people that were alive in that area at that time, couldn't you? Because Joseph did what he was told to do, because Pharaoh recognized that God was God, and then did what God told him to do, a lot of people were saved physically in that time, weren't they? I can't imagine Pharaoh meeting God in that way and not being changed. Can you? And meeting God in such an awesome way like that, and then it coming to true over the next 7 or 8 years. You know what he'd said, he's got to know and understand that God was God, you know, and he's in charge. Pharaoh recognized the Spirit of God at work in Joseph's life and realized, probably for the first time, that Pharaoh wasn't God. You know, that he wasn't actually God. That he couldn't actually control what was going to happen over the next few years. The best that we can ever hope for in our Christian walk is that people recognize God's Spirit on or in us. And that through the outworking of God's power in us, people will come to truly know him, the true daddy, the true and only God. Next time, if it's God's will, we'll look at the awesome things that happened as God sort of really did swing the scales in Joseph's favour. The awesome plan that God had for Joseph's life really did come in a big way, and it came in fast. If you've got time, read chapter 39 to 42, and that will sort of prime you. It'll give you an idea of what we've done so far, and it'll sort of get you ready for the next part, because God really fulfills in a big way in the next bit, doesn't he? So, amen. God bless his word.